slug sliding around in the base of my stomach, or something new, something I didn't even know was there, but I feel it crackle and burst like a tiny sparkler inside of me. I should go visit him, I blurt out before I remember that I shouldn't keep talking about my dad with Roman, that Roman knows Brian Jackson, that Roman would hate me if he knew the truth. Roman clears his throat.
What?
I bounce up from the bench. I've decided I want to see my dad one last time before I die. Roman doesn't get up. When I bring myself to look at him, he's frowning.
You aren't dying from cancer, Azelle,
he says, raising his voice.
You aren't terminally ill.
What is that supposed to mean?
We aren't making wish lists. This isn't about doing things we want to do before we die. This is, and has always been, about dying. Only about dying.
He shuffles his feet and wrings his hands.
Are you bailing on me?
Blood rushes to my face. I'm not bailing on you. I just need to see him one last time. I want to look him in the eye and... Roman gets up from the bench. He puts his arm around me, and this time I don't jump at his touch. I lean into his body.
And what? What are you hoping to find? It sounds to me like you are looking for reasons to live.
My throat is tight, and all these words line up, ready to spill out, but the black slug devours them, one by one. That's not it, I manage to squeak out.
Then what is it?
I just need to see him, Roman. I think if I see him, I'll be able to jump from that cliff. Nothing will be holding me back. He tilts his head toward the sky.
And right now something is?
I don't know how to tell him that I'm not sure I can truly destroy my potential energy until I understand the root of it all. And as of a couple of minutes ago, I'm convinced the only way to do that is to see my dad one last time. Roman lowers his chin to look at me again.
We can go see your father. If that is what you need, I'll help you with it.
Part of me wants to toss my arms around his neck and pull him close, press my face against his chest and thank him, but I know for sure that isn't what he or I signed up for. I wish someone would give my heart a polygraph. It keeps lying and flipping and changing its mind. I can't decide what matters more to me. Roman being there with me to face my father, or Roman not discovering the truth. As I watch him watching me, his hazel eyes wide and wanting, a slight shiver ripples across my chest. Maybe I'm naive, but I'm starting to think that Roman would understand, that he wouldn't hold me accountable for what my dad did. Maybe I need to give him the chance to prove he really is different from everyone else. I scan his face, searching for any sign that he already knows. My name isn't mentioned in the internet articles about my dad. Believe me, I've checked, but I'm pretty sure a basic Google search would have given him an inkling. There aren't many Turkish people in Langston, let alone in Kentucky. But as I stare up at his deep-set eyes, his full lips, his cheeks that are slightly flushed from the sun, I don't find any clues that he knows. All I see is someone who seems to care, and that makes me almost as uneasy as the fact that he could discover everything about my dad at any moment. Maybe it would be better if I told him, if he heard it from me instead of from someone else. The words form in the base of my throat, and I'm about to tell him everything when he stretches his hand out and grabs mine. He squeezes it, massaging my fingers with his.
It's seriously okay, Azelle. I'm sorry I yelled before. We'll go see your dad together, okay?
Okay, is the only word I manage to utter. I press my tongue up against the roof of my mouth and make a small promise that I will tell him the truth about my dad. Not today, but sometime soon. He squeezes my hand again.
So what's next?
Want to go see the polar bears? I should take some pictures of them swimming.
Sure.
He flashes me his half-moon smile.
It'll be nice to see the polar bears one last time. The polar bears were always Maddie's favorite.
That's when I wonder if maybe Frozen Robot has a list of things he wants to do before he dies, too, and he just doesn't know it yet. I want to know it. Tuesday, March 26th. 12 days left. I get off work early and drive as fast as I can. My plan is to beat everyone home before dinner, so I will have a few moments alone to poke around in the study. If my mom saved anything about my dad, I'll find it in there. I open the front door and stand in the hallway for a moment, holding my breath, hoping I'm the only one here. Hello? I hear Mike call out. Mike, it's just me. I say softly, not wanting to make my presence known if someone else is home with him. What are we having for dinner? His loud voice practically shakes the whole house. Mike inherited Steve's vocal cords. If I didn't love him so much, I might be irritated. I don't know, Mikey. Mom will be home soon. You can ask her, okay? Okay, he answers. Do you want to come up and play FIFA with me? My lips twitch, and I fight the urge to smile. Maybe later. I have lots of homework. Okay. I can hear the disappointment in his voice. I do my best to shrug it off and focus on the task at hand, snooping through Mom's stuff. I walk down the narrow hallway and turn the corner into the study. It's cramped and cluttered, hardly bigger than a closet. I hop over a few boxes so I can get behind the flimsy plastic desk. I crane my neck to examine the boxes on the upper shelves of the bookcase. If I know my mother at all, which admittedly is questionable, she'd store our family's dirty laundry in the most inaccessible place. Standing on the computer chair, I reach for one of the cardboard boxes filled with manila folders. The chair swivels under my feet. As I stretch my fingers out, grasping for the box, I lose my balance and manage to knock two of the boxes and some books to the floor. I fall off the chair with a thud and press my palms into the worn carpet to break my fall. My wrists burn, and I see papers scattered all over the carpet. Fuck. Azel? I look up and see Mike standing in front of me. Double fuck. He's clutching his video game controller to his chest, and his mouth gapes open. Are you okay? Yeah, sorry about the noise. I wave my hands in the direction of the scattered papers. I lost my balance. He narrows his eyes. What are you looking for? I crawl on my knees and start picking up the papers and shoving them randomly back into the boxes. So much for Mom's organized study. One of the papers catches my eye. It's an old report card of mine from fourth grade. I pick it up and run my fingers over the thin paper. I'm surprised she saved it. Azel? Mike says, his voice escalating in volume. Why are you going through Mom's things? I hold up my old report card. Oh, sorry. I was looking for some old stuff of mine from school. You know, for college applications. Why do you keep saying sorry? He passes the video game controller to his left hand and runs his right hand through his blonde, wavy hair. He always touches his hair when he's nervous or uncomfortable. I do my best to brighten my face. Because I scared you. He gives me a toothy grin. You didn't scare me. I force myself to smile. Hey, you want to go back upstairs? He frowns. I can't help you look. I think Mom would be mad if I let you play around in here. He juts out his lower lip. I wouldn't be playing. I'd be helping you. I know, but she doesn't want you in here. He sighs. Fine. As he walks away, I say, Hey, Mikey? Yeah? Can you do me a favor? Depends. What is it? Don't tell Mom I was in here. So it's like a secret? He asks excitedly. Yeah, our secret. Cool. Come up and play later? I bob my head enthusiastically. It hurts my neck. I'm not used to moving it so fast. For sure. Once he's gone, I go back to picking up the papers. I find all sorts of things. Old birthday cards, bills, credit reports. I would say there's no rhyme or reason to the way things are ordered, but I probably destroyed the organizational system when I accidentally dumped out the boxes. I'm about to give up hope when I come across an envelope. It's empty, but the return address catches my eye. McGreevy Correctional Facility. That must have been about my dad. McGreevy Correctional Facility. That's where he is. I'm crawling around, searching for the corresponding letter, when I hear the door open. Hello? Mike bellows. It's me, sweetie, I hear Mom answer. I quickly finish shoving all the loose papers back into the boxes. I'm about to try to put them on the upper shelf when I hear footsteps behind me. Azelle, what are you doing in here? I turn and face my mom. She's dressed in her work uniform, a red polo and pressed khaki pants. Or the khaki pants are supposed to be pressed. Hers are a bit wrinkled and beginning to fray. I notice that her shoes are old and scuffed. Maybe once I'm gone and there's one less kid to worry about, she'll be able to cut back on her hours, or at least afford to buy herself some new shoes. Looking for something for my college applications. The look on my mom's face shreds my insides. It's warm and full of hopeful surprise. Really? Yeah, I needed to check to see if I got an A or a B in freshman bio. Her mouth pulls into a thin line, like she isn't quite convinced, so I continue. You know, because that, my grades, they'll determine what schools I apply to. She looks hard at me and brings her fingers to her lips. Isn't there someone at your school who can help you with that? Yeah, but I was too curious to wait. The lie makes my tongue feel thick as I watch Mom's face brighten all over again. Well, did you find what you were looking for? She eyes the boxes like she knows their contents are all mixed up. Yep. I step in front of them to try to block her view. Sorry for getting them down. I'll put the boxes back on the shelf. She shakes her head. No, you could hurt yourself. I'll have Steve put them back when he gets home. She hovers in the doorway, and I can tell she's waiting for me to walk out with her. I move to join her in the hallway, and she flicks off the light in the study. We walk in silence to the kitchen, and then I excuse myself to go upstairs. Once I'm in my room, I flop on the bed and try to erase the image of my mom's bright, hopeful face from my mind. Pulling the comforter over my head, I sink down into the mattress. I place my hands on my stomach and urge the black slug to remind me that Mom will be better off when I'm gone, safer, that what'll happen on April 7th is the best thing for her in the end. How it's the best thing for everyone. especially me. Wednesday, March 27th. 11 days left. Today at work, we're conducting a phone marathon for the town of Langston. Every year at the end of March, Langston throws a carnival in the backyard of the middle school to raise money, mostly for the basketball program, but the Langston Public School District puts on a good face and claims they are using the money to beef up our science and math programs. They always cart in a few low-grade rides, a Ferris wheel, and spinning teacups, set up concession stands that sell sticky cotton candy and extra sugary sodas, and have the cheer team perform a few risque dance routines. The creepy middle-aged men of Langston really love the spring carnival. I pick up the phone's receiver and dial the next number on my call log. John Gordon, who lives at 415 Mound Street. Maybe John is the demographic that will already be at the spring carnival, and so he won't even need reminding. It rings twice before John picks up. No such luck.
Hello?
His accent is spot-on Kentucky. Hello, Mr. Gordon, I say. My name is Azelle, and I'm calling from Tucker's Marketing Concepts on behalf of the city of Langston.
Yes?
He sounds a little impatient, but he's less irate than the usual voice I find on the other end of the phone. As you may know, the city is hosting its annual spring carnival. I deliver my spiel about how proceeds raised by the carnival provide invaluable funds for Langston's schools. I gush about the cheerleaders' upcoming performances and how fun and safe, yeah, right, the Ferris wheel is. I end with the mandated final line. It's a great time for people of all ages, a real family-friendly event. I obviously don't mention that the cheerleaders normally wear leopard print bikini tops and dance around outside, even though it's barely over 50 degrees. There's silence on the other end of the phone. Mr. Gordon?
Yeah, I know the spring carnival, he says. My family's planning to go tomorrow afternoon.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Gordon. The one thing that can be said for the people of Langston is that they tend to show up for Langston. Today at work, I'm more focused than usual. I want to get through my call log. Really, I just want my shift to be over. I've recently noticed that if I actually work at work, the time goes by faster. After I've called about 6 people in a row, I look over at Laura. Her brow is furrowed, and she keeps blinking. What? I ask, and reach for the phone receiver to dial my next number. You're just weird today. She gets up and heads to the coffee maker.
It's almost like you're happy. Did you finally meet someone?
I laugh, and it comes out as a dry rattle. Happy? The sad thing is, she's not that far off base. I did meet someone, but not in the way she thinks. It's weird that I'm working? She nods.
Very weird.
Just trying to make you proud, Laura. I give her a fake salute, and she shakes her head. 2 minutes before my shift ends, I open up the internet browser. I haven't goofed around all day, so I feel like I've totally earned this free time. I search the web for McGreevy Correctional Facility's phone number. It takes me a minute, but eventually I find the number I'm looking for. I scribble it down on the legal notepad next to my desk and then rip the paper off the pad and fold it up and slide it into my pocket. I get up out of my seat and fling my backpack over my shoulders. On my way out, I wave to Mr. Palmer. He looks like he might have a heart attack.
Bye, Azelle, he says, weakly.
Like Laura pointed out, I know I seem to be in a better mood, but I'm not sure if I'm really in a better mood or if it's a trick my mind is playing on me. Like I know it's all going to be over soon, so there's no need to be anxious about things anymore. I have everything planned out. I know exactly how I want to spend my last days, and that sense of purpose is comforting. I used to feel so devastated thinking about the length of days, about how time seems to stretch on forever, unforgiving and unchanging, and like John Berryman said, so boring. I wonder if this is how marathon runners feel once they reach the last mile. They know they can make it through the final stretch, so there's no use in getting fatigued at this point. I toss my backpack into the passenger seat and then climb into the front seat. I unzip the front pocket of my backpack and grab my cell phone. I pull the folded notepad sheet out of my pocket. I take a deep breath and then dial the number. I call unknown numbers all the time at work, so this shouldn't make me nervous, but I feel my heart racing. And so I turn on the classical radio station ever so slightly. Bach's Mass in B minor pours out of the speakers, and as I listen to the music, it feels like someone wrapped a blanket around my shoulders. I adjust the volume so it's not too loud in case someone at McGreevy Correctional Facility eventually decides to answer the phone. Kicking my legs up on the dashboard, I fold the driver's seat back so I can lie flat. I'm humming along with the music, tapping my fingers against the torn fabric seat, when I'm startled by a voice on the other end.
"This is Tom. How can I help you?"
I lurch forward in my seat. "Is this McGreevy Correctional Facility?"
"Yes,"
he says with an aggravated sigh. "I'm calling because I'm looking for information on how I can visit my father."
"Huh?"
"My father, he's an..." I search for the word. "Inmate there."
"Ah," Tom says. I guess Tom is a man of one-syllable answers. "Let me transfer you over to visiting."
Before I can say anything, the phone line goes blank. And the cheesy elevator holding music comes back on. I turn the volume up on my car radio. After not too long, a new voice greets me.
"This is Bob."
McGreevy Correctional Facility employees aren't only into one-syllable answers, they're also into one-syllable names. "Hi, Bob," I say, trying to seem friendly so he'll help me. "I was calling to get some information on how I can visit my dad."
"Your dad's locked up here?"
"Yeah," I say, trying to sound like it's no big deal, like I'm down with the prison system or something.
"And you're on the list?"
"What?"
"His visiting list. If you're his daughter, you should be on the list."
I gulp. "I don't know if I'm on the list. Mom's never let me visit Dad. Not even once."
"Well, if you aren't on the list, there's nothing I can do to help you, but my guess would be that you're on it. When people get locked up, they tend to put their immediate family on the list as a default, in case any of them ever want to visit."
"Okay," I say slowly. "So I just show up?" He makes a sound that's somewhere between a laugh and a snort.
"Yeah. You just show up during visiting hours. It's a first-come, first-served basis. If all the visiting booths are filled when you get here, you'll have to get on the waiting list. And I can't make any guarantees about the waiting list."
So many lists. "When are visiting hours?"
"Girl,"
Bob says, and I can practically hear him shaking his head.
"All this info is on our webpage. But because I like you, I'll tell you."
Looks like the friendliness paid off. "Thank you so much, Bob."
"So Tuesday through Saturday, we have visiting hours. We have a morning session that runs 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and an afternoon session that runs 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. And want a tip?"
"I'd love one, Bob."
"Try to get here as early as you can. You'll have better luck that way. System can get jammed toward the end of the day.
I really appreciate it. I'll see you Saturday.
Yeah, okay.
Bob hangs up first. I adjust my car seat so I can sit straight up, but I don't drive away from TMC. My head feels crowded and overwhelmed with competing thoughts. I cradle it in my hands and take deep breaths. After a few minutes, I pick up my phone again and call Frozen Robot. I know it's stupid, but I can't help myself. I want to share my thoughts with someone, and he's the only person I could possibly talk to. I guess this is another reason why people have suicide partners. They come in handy.
Hey,
Roman says. Hey, what are you up to? No answer. Just hanging out in your room? I prompt.
What else would I be doing?
I don't know. Playing basketball? I imagine him glaring at me. Him flopped on his back on the cotton comforter, his golden green eyes narrowed, a pencil in his hand, balancing a sketch pad against his knees. I picture Captain Nemo telling him to chill out and that only making him angrier. I guess I laugh because Roman says,
"Please cut it out."
"Okay, I'll stop, I promise," I say quickly.
"You keep saying that, and you don't stop. It's starting to get really annoying."
I dig my fingernails into the car's seat. I don't want to be annoying to Frozen Robot. I know I shouldn't care what I am to him, but a small part of me kind of does.
"Sorry,"
Roman says in a low voice.
"I shouldn't have said that."
"No, it's okay. I deserved it."
"No, you didn't."
I pause for a moment. The line is silent, and all I can hear is his shallow breath. I want to ask if he's drawing, but I don't. "Can I come pick you up?"
"Why would you do that?"
I inhale sharply and try to come up with an excuse to see him. My mind swirls and I remember all my phone calls from today. "I was thinking we could go to the Langston Spring Carnival."
"Have you gone completely insane?"
"Is that a yes?" I tease and then quickly correct my tone. "I mean, you're the one who said it was going to be easier for you to sneak away on the 7th if your mom really believed we were close friends."
"True, but I don't get why you want to go to the carnival."
"I'll be there in 15 minutes, I say, and hang up. And he's right. By all standards, by my own standards, I should want to avoid the carnival. But the closer we get to April 7th, the more reckless I feel. The truth is, the spring carnival is one of the last places I can remember being truly happy. I don't know how old I was when I first realized that the black slug inside of me would inevitably eat any and every positive thought of mine. But I do know that the last time I was at the carnival, my little hand interlocked with my dad's, my happiness didn't disappear. It stayed. Wednesday, March 27th. 11 days left. I text him when I'm in front of his house, and within seconds, Frozen Robot is walking toward my car. The hood of his blue sweatshirt is pulled over his ears, and he's hunched over, like he's trying to hide from some invisible enemy. Once he's inside the car, and I've turned to pull away from his street, he says,
"So why are we going to the carnival?"
"I thought I was doing you a favor. Your mom will be really excited that you're out doing normal social things." He bangs his head back against the headrest.
"Yeah, you said that on the phone. I'm asking why you want to go to the carnival."
I glance over at him. His jaw is clenched, and his eyes are downcast. He doesn't look like he's in the mood for any nonsense. No need to be so angry, frozen robot. Okay, fine. I'll level with you. I called McGreevy Correctional Facility. I pause. That's where my dad is, by the way. He's locked away there. And anyway, I wanted to tell you what I found out about the possibility of visiting him. He lifts his chin and stares straight ahead out the windshield. He doesn't seem to have any reaction to my confession that my dad is locked away in prison. It's like I just told him my dad flips pancakes at the local diner or something. Did you hear me? My dad's an inmate at McGreevy Correctional Facility. Roman doesn't look over at me. He keeps staring out the windshield.
Couldn't you have just told me that on the phone?
I shrug, even though I know he's not watching me. It's funny the things we do, even though no one is watching. Well, yeah, but I thought it might be fun to go to the carnival, and then I could tell you in person.
Fun?
He spits the word out in the same way he spit friends out on the first day I met him. He finally turns to look at me.
Who are you?
I press my foot against the gas pedal and stare straight ahead, doing my best not to show how hurt I am by his tone. I don't answer his question, because I'm not sure I even know the answer anymore. We drive the rest of the way in silence. Once we get to the carnival, I park my car in the muddy lot across from Langston Middle School. We walk side by side to the entrance, and I buy tickets for the both of us. It's the least I can do, considering I made him come with me, and he paid for me at the zoo. On the gates leading into the main ground, someone hung five large banners, all of which feature Brian Jackson. I sneak a glance at Roman and see him studying the photographs. The inside of my mouth is dry, but I force myself to speak. When's the last time you two talked? He shrugs.
A while ago. I don't really know the guy anymore.
I may be paranoid. Actually, I know I'm paranoid. But it sounds like there's something lurking just beneath the surface of Roman's voice. Like he knows something that he doesn't want me to know he knows. Were you really as fast as him? I think back to the first time I met Roman, when his friends Lance and Travis boasted about his athletic skills. Roman lets out a cold laugh.
No, Bri was always way faster.
He turns from the banner to me, a sly grin on his face.
But I could dribble circles around him.
A shallow wave of relief washes over me. Maybe what I sensed in Roman's voice wasn't judgment about my dad. Maybe he still really doesn't know. Maybe it was just jealousy. A reminder of how much his life has changed since Maddie died. I'm about to ask more questions, but Roman nods his head in the direction of the carnival.
So are we going to go in, or what?
I hand him his ticket. Yeah, let's go. The carnival is already crowded. Younger kids dart by us, chasing after one another, their hands sticky with cotton candy and their lips dyed blue from drinking one too many slushies. My heart drops into my stomach. I miss being that age. Before I completely realized that there was something seriously wrong with my dad, that there was something seriously wrong with me. Roman places his hand on the small of my back. I can't quite figure Frozen Robot out. For someone who can be so cold, he's awfully handsy.
You okay?
Just memories, I say. The ground is soft beneath my feet, and my sneakers sink into the mud. The whole place smells like popcorn and fried food and dirt. He nods and takes his hand off my back.
Maddie loved this carnival.
I don't know what to say, so I make a lame suggestion. Want to ride the Ferris wheel?
He shrugs. Sure, why not?
We wait in line. I see a few other kids from my class. I wonder if they're here to watch my sister's performance. I should probably go to that, even though my presence would likely hurt more than it would help. It always does. I see Stacy Jenkins lean into Nate Connors and whisper to him. I imagine she's saying something about me. I bite down on the side of my cheek and do my best to ignore them. Roman glances at me and seems to sense me tensing up.
What's wrong? Do you have a problem with...
I cut him off. Don't worry about it. He turns around and gives Stacy and Nate a dirty look. If they weren't already whispering about me, this really makes them take notice. I hate the feeling of their eyes on the back of my neck like I'm a target they can't wait to hit. I wrap my arms around myself and try to tune it all out. I hum Mozart's Requiem, slowly rocking back and forth on the balls of my feet. I don't want Roman to engage my classmates in a conversation about me. If they start talking, he'll definitely figure out who my dad is. I can't think of a worse way for him to find out. We reach the front of the line, and a man who maybe has half his teeth left motions for us to get into the next car. We hop in and slowly start to leave the ground.
You really think visiting your dad is going to help you?
Roman asks. He's looking at me instead of at the ground below, missing the entire point of riding the Ferris wheel. I don't know if it'll help, but I need to know some things. I gaze out at the concession stands and game booths that are becoming tinier and tinier. I wonder if dying is like that. Everything in your mind becomes tinier and tinier until it all disappears.
What things?
Roman presses.
You said that seeing him again won't change your mind about, you know.
His hands jump on his lap. I think about telling him that he should be comfortable enough with the topic of death now to just say it, but I let it go. The last thing I need is to pick another fight with him. Look, I say, my voice rising in volume. My dad was an awful guy, right? He did an unimaginable, horrific thing. I just want to know why he did it.
But why? If it doesn't matter anyway, why do you need to know?
His voice is soft and calm. No pressure, no judgment. I'm overwhelmed with the urge to hug Frozen Robot. I love that his question isn't what my dad did. He isn't interested in the gory details. I stare at his broad shoulders and imagine my face pressed up against his chest. I can't let myself think like that, so I shift my eyes to the ground, zeroing in on the soft pretzel stand. My dad loved soft pretzels. He used to joke that they were one of the best things about life in America. He'd buy a cinnamon sugar one for me and a cheddar cheese and onion one for him. We'd stroll around the festival, pretzels in hand, pointing at the different rides and debating which ones we should check out. And in those rare moments, I felt at home.
Hey, wake up.
Roman taps my shoulder and waves his hand in front of my face. Sorry, I guess I spaced out. I like looking at the ground below. I like watching everything get smaller.
Right, but you still haven't answered my question. I want to understand, Azelle, I really do. But I don't. If you're going to jump with me on April 7th, why does it matter why your dad did what he did?
I bite my thumbnail and force myself to think about the weeks leading up to my father's crime. He'd been on edge, even more than usual. He was convinced he was losing money because kids were shoplifting, pocketing candy bars and magazines when he wasn't looking. I remember one day I bounded into the store after school and found him sitting behind the counter, maniacally leafing through papers. He looked up at me with bloodshot eyes.
"I try and I try, Zelie, but I just don't know if it's going to be enough."
Part of me wanted to run away from those eyes, but I swallowed my fear and joined him behind the counter. I put my arms around him and pressed my nose into the fabric of his shirt, which always smelled like garlic. After a few moments, he started to hum a piece from Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 1. I squeeze my eyes shut. Sometimes I can still hear my dad's low voice in my ear. "I don't know, Roman," I sigh and open my eyes. "But he raised me, you know? I just need some closure." Our car comes to a stop at the bottom, and we jump out of it. Roman drapes his arm around my shoulder and pulls me close to him.
"As long as you aren't flaking out."
"I told you, I'm not a flake."
"That's my girl."
My heart jumps a little when he says that, and I remind myself to get a grip. Anyway, Roman's wrong. I'm not flaking out or looking for reasons to live. I'm looking to validate my reasons for dying. But when I glance up at his face and see the dark shadows under his eyes, I'm not sure if it's him or me I'm trying to convince of that. "I'm not a flake," I repeat mentally to myself. "I'm not a flake. This is what I want."
"What's going on with you?"
Roman frowns. "Nothing," I say, and I wish that were the case. "So you can go with me this Saturday?"
"To visit your dad?"
"Yeah."
"Sure, I guess,"
he says.
"I'll have to come up with something to tell my mom so I can get away."
"Okay. I'll pick you up Saturday morning. Probably pretty early. Does that work?" He shrugs.
"Just text me."
"Okay." We stand in silence for a few awkward moments.
"Well, you dragged me here. We might as well try to have some fun."
He says the word fun like it's a foreign word, a joke. He steers me toward the mini basketball game stand. He hands the worker some rumpled bills, and she gives him a basketball. I don't recognize the woman, but she's probably one of my classmates' moms. She gives me a look like she knows who I am and who my dad is, but she doesn't say anything. He holds the basketball in his hands and eyes the hoop. I write the physics practice question in my head, trying to calculate the potential energy of the ball. Roman puts the ball down on the edge of the booth and looks at me.
"You're doing it again, aren't you?"
"What?" I cross my arms over my chest. The woman working at the booth raises her eyebrows at me. I can tell she's one of those moms that gets off on teenage drama. Great.
"Your science nerd thing. You're always thinking about physics."
My cheeks burn. "How did you know?" His face lights up with his familiar, crooked smile.
"You had the same face you made when you were taking photos at the zoo. Like you're really concentrating on something."
He turns back to the basketball hoop and takes the shot. Swoosh. It goes through the net effortlessly. Frozen Robot has game. The woman running the booth holds up one thin finger to indicate he scored a point. "Thanks for that. We can count to one. We're suicidal, not innumerate." I nod at her to let her know we understand. Roman turns the ball over in his hands.
"I like that thinking look, though. It's cute."
I can't help but laugh. I don't think anyone in the entire history of my life has ever referred to me as cute. Even when I was little, I was always unique, code for not looking like everyone else in Langston, or sweet, code for being quiet and unassuming, but never cute.
What?
He crouches down slightly and thrusts the ball into the air again. It bounces against the rim, but ends up falling through the net. I hold two fingers up at the woman, and she gives me a weak smile.
Yep,
she says. Her southern accent is heavy and thick. He's made two, and he has two more left. Roman studies the different stuffed animals. There are rows and rows of pink pandas and fluorescent orange tigers. I even spot a few blue elephants.
What can I win?
He asks. She bounces up, straightening her posture, and does her best game show host impression as she stretches her arm out in front of her, making a sweeping motion in the direction of the stuffed elephants and pandas and tigers. If you make all four shots, you can pick whatever one you want.
Even that huge lion?
Roman asks, craning his neck so he can get a better look at the giant lion that sits at the very top. Its mane looks like it'd be really itchy if you pressed your face to it, but it's impressive looking, nonetheless. She smiles wide at me.
Including the lion. Is that the one you want?
Me? I blink at her.
Yeah, he's winning the prize for you, sweetheart, isn't he?
She makes a clucking sound. I've never understood why women from Langston love to do that. I guess they feel some kind of strange affinity with the chicken population. I don't think so. I slip my hands into the pockets of my black jeans and shift my weight from my right foot to my left. Roman pretends like he didn't hear her comment. He prepares to make his next shot. As I watch Roman, his face pulled in concentration, his deep-set eyes wide and eager, his ropey arm muscles tensed. I wonder if he sees something similar to that when he watches me think about physics. Sure, he still looks pretty miserable, pretty frozen robotish. But yet there's something there. Like the shadows that sometimes sneak their way into the frame of a picture. Part of me wants to reach out and grab it, bring it into focus. All of a sudden, I realize what that shadowy something is. It's joy. Frozen Robot loves basketball. He loves playing it. No matter how hard he tries to push that joy away, it's there. I wonder if joy has potential energy, or if there is a potential energy that leads to joy, like a happiness serum that lingers in people's stomachs and slowly bubbles up to create the sensation we know as happiness. If that's true, my black slug eats all of mine. Scratch that. Most of mine. Watching Frozen Robot play basketball has almost made me smile. Keyword, almost. He nails the third shot and the fourth shot. I've hardly been paying attention to the actual shots. I like his process of preparing for them more than the actual moment. The moment goes by too fast. It's almost impossible to catch.
So what'll it be?
The woman asks. I notice she has mulberry-colored lipstick smudged on her front tooth.
Whatever the lady wants,
Roman says, and I'm completely caught off guard. The woman with the lipstick-stained tooth turns to me.
The lion, then?
Any words I had are all jumbled in my throat. Frozen Robot should not be winning me prizes at the carnival. The last thing I need is more stuff to leave behind. The last thing I need is to feel more confused. I shake my head at the lady. I don't want anything, She frowns, and Roman nudges his shoulder up against mine.
Come on, Azel. You have to choose one. I won.
I know, I sputter. It's just, I want something else. The woman's frown deepens. These are the only prizes we have available, hon. I shake my head again, harder this time. No, I don't want a different prize. I just want you to give the prize he won to someone else. The woman raises her eyebrows in confusion. I try my best to explain. Like if another kid comes to play but doesn't make any shots, can you let him have a prize anyway? I bite my bottom lip. The woman puts her hands on her hips. But how will I know what kid to give it to? I shrug. Give it to the one who looks like they need it the most. Whoever looks like the loneliest. Her nose twitches as she considers this, and then she gives me a small smile. Okay, darling, whatever you want. You're going to make some little kid's day. That giant lion is going to make someone's day, I say, and then whisper to myself. At least I hope so. As we walk away from the game booth, Roman holds out his hand. I grab it, and he laces his fingers with mine. I don't say anything. I know it's not like that. It's a different kind of hand-holding. It's the way we'll probably hold hands on April 7th. But as much as my mind knows that, a warmth still spreads over my skin. I hope he doesn't notice. Maybe he'll just think I have naturally sweaty palms.
That was really cool, he says, swinging our hands up in the air and then back down.
I let him move my hand like we're one entity.
Were you a lonely kid?
I contemplate this for a moment. Not always. He tilts his chin down so he can look me in the eye. He doesn't say anything, but he doesn't have to. I know he's asking for me to explain. After what happened with my dad, I lost all my friends. Some of them distanced themselves immediately, but some of them I pushed away. It was too scary to let anyone be close to me. I sigh. I don't know how to explain it. Roman nods. In the outside light, his eyes are a golden green, like grass that's been stained by summer sunshine.
No, I understand. It's like your sadness is so deep and overwhelming that you're worried it will drown everyone else in your life if you let them too close to it.
He gets it. Exactly. He reaches out with his other hand and brushes a strand of hair away from my face.
I did the same thing, you know. I pushed my friends away. But it's what you have to do, I think. It's the only way.
He's still holding my hand, his fingers entangled with mine, and I wonder how quickly he'd drop my hand if he knew what my dad did to Timothy Jackson.
Tell me more about it. Your sadness.
He presses. Why?
I want to understand. I like understanding you. It's been a long time since I related to someone else. But I think I get you.
My black hole of a heart stalls, sucking all the air out of my lungs. It can't be like this. It will only make April 7th harder. A crowd of middle school boys rushes by us and makes ooh and ah noises. Roman's cheeks flush red, but he still doesn't let go of my hand. I feel myself blushing, too. We stand still for a few moments, and then he lightly tugs on my hand to encourage me to keep walking, and we wander the fairground in silence, our sneakers crunching the straw they've laid on the ground to soak up the mud. As we approach the twirling teacups ride, Roman starts talking again.
Sometimes, for me, it feels like my grief is eating me alive. I always thought that the hardest moments would be when I remember things about her, but that's not true. The hardest moments are when I miss her in the future. Sure, holidays are hard, but I'm talking about small things, like when we're at the grocery store and I pass by the frozen section and imagine Madison begging Mom to buy a large pack of popsicles.
He stops talking for a moment and lets out a low choke of a laugh.
Yeah, for 6 months my mom never let me out of her sight, so she forced me to go to the grocery store with her.
He hangs his head, staring at his mud-stained shoes.
The worst part is that I know I'm the reason she's not there to beg for popsicles. What I wouldn't give to see her one more time, to switch places with her.
I tighten my grip on his hand, like I'm scared that he's going to disappear, that his grief will devour him right here on the spot.
That's why I draw,
he confesses.
Before Madison died, I used to sketch, but I hid it from everyone. It wasn't something I did seriously. And let's be real, my basketball buddies would have given me so much shit about it. But now I draw because sometimes it feels impossible to talk. It's like I'm trapped in this deep hole that I can't get out of. I draw to try to escape it, even though I know I'll never be able to.
I swallow the heavy lump in my throat and process everything he just confessed. I'm not sure I've ever heard Frozen Robot say so many words in a row before. My body aches for him, and I wish there was something I could do, but I know enough to know there isn't. There's no saving him from his deep hole. There's no saving me from my black slug. But at least you have a right to miss Madison, I say softly. He must understand what I'm trying to say because he asks,
Do you miss him, your dad?
Yeah, I say without hesitation. Yeah, I do. And that's how I know I'm crazy. He stops moving and turns to face me, closing the distance between our bodies. We stand chest to chest, or rather, my chin to his chest. He keeps holding my one hand and puts his other on the back of my neck. His palm is warm and clammy. Maybe, just maybe, he's a little nervous and confused, too.
I don't think you're crazy,
he whispers.
But I understand why it's confusing. I wish it wasn't like that for you. That none of it had happened.
Me too, I breathe, my voice barely audible. He pushes on my shoulders with his right hand to make the space between us a little wider so he can look at me.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
As a science nerd, do you believe in other universes? Do you think there's another dimension where we're happy? Where you still have your dad and I still have Maddie? Where we're just a normal boy and a normal girl at a carnival?
I drop his hand and shrug away from him. I can't think about that. He scrunches his face up and rubs the back of his neck.
How come?
It's confusing.
And all your shit about potential energy isn't?
My face burns. I don't know. That feels different. Less hypothetical, I guess. I'm trying to come up with something smart to say, something to make him understand why my jabbering about potential energy is more hard science and less science fiction. But before I can come up with anything, he says.
You know what's confusing?
I nod to let him know to go on.
Watching you be so happy when you think about science, it makes me kind of happy.
He slouches his shoulders and shuffles his feet.